pranks have long been a part of human history, stretching across time and cultures. Kembrew McLeod chronicles the history of pranking in his book, Pranksters: Making Mischief in the Modern World. Virginia sat down with him to discuss why we're so drawn to mischief making.
The title of your book is Pranksters, but you divide the mischievousness into three categories: pranksters, hoaxers, and con artists. Why not just use the blanket term pranks? What's the distinction?
Yeah, for me, a prank is public provocation and uses mass media to circulate it in order to make a thoughtful, socially conscious point, as opposed to a hoax or a publicity stunt, which basically uses the same tactics, but the purpose is essentially to either self-promote or make fun of someone else. And then con artists also use the same strategies, but they use the strategies in the service of ripping you off. Yes, they use the same tactics, but for me, you know, I'm not interested in celebrating cruelty. I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in the kinds of almost performance art-esque provocations that turn the world askew so that you can sort of see it from a new perspective, even if it's just for a moment.
Well, let's hear a little bit example of that performance art in action. It's our guest, Kembrew McLeod, who is professor of communication studies at University of Iowa, but a prankster in his own right. Before we hear this, give us a little bit of background on your freedom of expression lawsuit.
Well, back in 1998, I applied to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to see if they would grant me a trademark for the phrase freedom of expression. It was basically a test to see whether or not, yeah, we live in a world where, you know, intellectual property rights have stretched so far that they would allow someone to privately own freedom of expression. I hoped I didn't live in that world, but it turned out I did, because in 1998 I was granted trademark for that term. And in 2003, when AT&T used that phrase in an ad campaign, I hired a lawyer to send a cease and desist letter to AT&T for using that phrase without my permission. More importantly, I also sent out press release. So the New York Times broke the story, which had the ripple effect of trickling down to wire services and so on. So lots of people basically heard this story. And I think storytelling is a really important part of a good prank. If there's like a good hook, oh, did you hear about the guy who trademarked freedom of expression? That's like a meme that allows my critique to travel far and wide.
Well, here you are at a press conference for the freedom of expression lawsuit.
You know, I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I spent a lot of time, you know, protecting my trademark and actually, you know, paying the $245 it costs to register for a trademark. And, you know, I guess it comes down to I spent too much time, money, and effort trademarking freedom of expression just to have any joker come along and think they can use it whenever they want.
So who got it and who didn't, I guess, Kembrew? And tell us why that matters.
I was saying earlier about how there has to be an underlying point to a good prank. And so it's not enough just to deceive people. There has to be the big reveal in which you sort of explain yourself afterwards. But just to ensure that everyone who read that story got it, you know, I followed up with, well, writing a book about the subject, op-eds that I wrote about the subject, so that I kind of educated the public in my own kind of quirky way.
Like you said, it starts with a good story, and there's another one that's easily picked up by the media. This is Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not sure if you know about this prank, but the fake twerk fail. Let's hear just a clip from that.
Even though the video was fake, that did not stop hundreds of news outlets from showing it. Some people even blamed Miley Cyrus as if this was her fault. But this is just a sampling of some of the many, many media outlets who fell for our little prank.
For this segment, we thought we just had to trot out this video because apparently it's everywhere.
The first time I saw it, viral video, 2 million views. It now has 8 million.
This girl's foray into twerking ended in near disaster.
I do believe the look on her face is
panic. You know,
well, it's a good thing nothing is happening in Syria right now. Did you have fun doing this?
So the prank obviously worked, went viral. But how is this different to you, Kembrew, than making some sort of statement about twerking? You know, why does a prank work where declarations do not?
Well, I mean, it's the same reason why The Daily Show and The Colbert Report are so popular. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of younger people use them as news sources, because you can get away with saying some pretty outrageous things and floating some outrageous ideas when you wrap it in a kind of sugar coating of humor. And I mean, there's a long tradition of that.
You were talking earlier about a distinction between pranks and hoaxes and cons. I wonder if you've got some examples of hoaxes or cons historically or contemporarily that you think particularly worked.
P.T. Barnum in the mid-19th century is a really interesting figure because he kind of blurred the lines between hoaxing and conning and even pranking, because a lot of his audiences would come to his museum, for instance, or his exhibits, knowing that what they're seeing, like a supposed mermaid, is probably fake. But they gain a certain amount of pleasure trying to decode how they're being tricked. And nowadays, I mean, well, you can look at all sorts of email phishing scams and so on. I mean, those are a very pronounced part of our digital age, and they are part of a con artist tradition that stretches back centuries.
Although many people are wise to those kind of email phishing scam cons, not everybody is. Why do you think it is, Kimber, that we are such easy marks for a con? I mean, obviously, it works.
Yeah. I mean, I think people fall for cons and also hoaxes and pranks when it basically confirms their own worldview. So, for instance, there's a website that's devoted to people who read Onion articles straight and then post them to Facebook, and they're disgusted by, for instance, a proposed Planned Parenthood $20 billion abortion megaplex. These people are falling for these obviously satirical articles when it confirms their own deep-seated beliefs.
Your book is quite an academic book in many ways. Do you think that considering pranks or looking at them through a scholarly lens takes any of the fun out of it?
Yeah, I think there's the old adage to dissect a joke is to kill it. But because I'm interested in the way that pranks can be productive and they can be thought-provoking and they can sharpen our critical skills, yeah, I will confess to treating pranks seriously, and I think we should.
That's Virginia Prescott speaking with Kembru McLeod, author of Pranksters: Making Mischief in the Modern World.